Hey everyone, Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton here with our weekly update on social media. Thank you for joining us this week. So much going on, I don't know whether I can track it all. We have international outrages from the Olympics, terrible, terrible news about the 9/11 and the dastardly plea deal the Biden regime came up with for them. More cover-ups from the Secret Service, a major update on what the on a major election integrity lawsuit that Judicial Watch is pursuing. We also have a new lawsuit about January 6th. We have this attack on the Supreme Court by the left, or Joe Biden, or as I say, whoever's running the Biden administration. Really a lot to get to. First up, though, is the moral and national security outrage of the Biden regime coming to essentially plea deals with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who is the architect of the 9/11 terrorist assault on America, nearly 3,000 murdered that day, and two of his associates, two top leaders also involved in helping orchestrate 9/11. Another terrorist attacks. And the plea deal, and we still don't know the full details of it because the sentencing related to it won't happen for some time, who knows when, takes the death penalty off the table. Now, I don't know about you, but that was the purpose, in my view, of prosecuting these folks, to make sure they face ultimate justice for the murder of 3,000 Americans. And instead, the left, which has controlled discussions and, in my view, everything that's happened around 9/11 since 9/11 in terms of justice, got what they wanted, which was basically a letting these terrorists get away with murder. As I've described them, advocates for terrorists are running the show when it comes to Gitmo. And this is the statement that Judicial Watch issued. Jihadist terrorists and other American enemies are surely celebrating their comrades' plea deal victory made possible by the Biden administration's surrender in court to the men responsible for helping murder nearly 3,000 Americans. America is less safe as a result of this Harris-Biden betrayal. And the left has been opposing the timely prosecution of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed for years. Obama tried to shut down Gitmo, for example. You may not remember that, but remember he tried to shut down Gitmo? As a matter of fact, he shut down the military trials against Khalid Sheikh Mohammed for a time until public outrage forced him to reconsider. Judicial Watch representatives have been monitoring the proceedings in Gitmo for years. And our representative there now is right there in Gitmo today. Or maybe he's coming back today. But he's been in Gitmo all week. And we can attest, based on extensive experience as observers there, that the whole process has been a circus from the get-go. So 9/11 survivors and the families of the victims and all Americans should be rightly outraged at this miscarriage of justice. And Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, he admitted to cutting off the head of journalist, an American citizen, Daniel Pearl, Wall Street Journal journalist. He chopped that poor man's head off. And the Biden people gave him a pass. After allowing these terrorists to string it along. And by the way, the left is, I talk about not just the left outside of government, inside government as well, as I talked about with Obama. They never wanted a full just resolution here. And now that it's happened, they can't even admit their involvement. Joe Biden is so completely out of it. Look at what his White House spokesman tried to do in explaining how this came about.
Unbelievable. Does he have a message to some of the 9/11 families who wanted to see a full trial, who wanted to see this kind of come to a fuller process?
So look, this is basically what Jake said. This is something that we had no involvement in. He didn't have any involvement in. And so the White House played no role in this process. And the president directed his team to consult as appropriate with officials and lawyers and Department of Defense, obviously. And we have said this before. Our hearts go out to the families who lost the loved ones on that day. And the president on 9/11 has honored them every year, and the families who lost their loved one on that terrible day.
I mean, she can't even look up. The White House had no role. Why not? He's commander in chief. These were military proceedings. If they had no role, who's running the government? It doesn't make any sense. And of course, she says, well, that we had no role, although the president ordered his staff to consult with appropriate officials. So which is it? Of course they had a role. He's responsible. We're not just watching from the sidelines on this issue. As I said, we've been observers at Guantanamo Bay. And one of the reasons we began that observation program that involved, I think we've had at least 80 people just in the last year or two go down. We've had law students go down. Our lawyers, our investigators, our staff have gone down. I think we've sent a journalist or two down to observe, because we knew immediately after 9/11, all the debates about so-called rights for the terrorists, all the legal fights, were controlled by the left. And conservatives who disputed this were few and far between. And we knew when it came to observing these terrorists being put on trial in those proceedings in Gitmo, there would be nothing but leftists there if we didn't show up. On behalf of you, the American people who wanted justice, on behalf of the victims of 9/11 who wanted justice. So what has happened is these proceedings have been slow-rolled, stonewalled, made more difficult by leftists in the Supreme Court, well-funded lawyers advocating for the terrorists. Obviously, they're going to have a defense. But what a failure. We still represent him. Lynn Faulkner, virtually since 9/11, his wife Wendy was murdered on 9/11 at the World Trade Center. We still have lawsuits over Saudi Arabia's role in it, and we've got lawsuits against Afghanistan and others. And let me tell you about Lynn and Wendy. Wendy visited New York that day on business. I think she was from Chicago, or at least was working in Chicago. And she was at the World Trade Center for a business meeting up on, I think, the 104th floor. So the attacks happened, and they were told to evacuate. So they all ran for the elevators. They were full. And she couldn't get on. So she and I think one of her other colleagues, or at least another woman, waited. And it was too late. She was killed. Body never recovered. And that's just one story, right? And there are 3,000 awful stories like what happened to the Faulkner family. She left behind two daughters. Her husband, I think her husband's remarried now. It's been 23 years, and we couldn't manage our system of justice to put those animals away for good, if you know what I mean. Unbelievable to me. What a failure of our system. I mean, this Justice Department has spent more time and attention trying to put Trump away on fake charges while they're negotiating with the 9/11 terrorists to save them from the justice of the death penalty, as I note. They'll say, oh, no, it wasn't the Justice Department, it was the Defense Department. They're all working together on cases like this. And the idea that the number one defendant still alive on 9/11 would get a plea deal without any involvement by the White House either is an indictment of President Biden's unfitness for office because of his mental disability, cognitive challenge, or it's a lie. So pick your poison. And we're not sitting on the sidelines on these issues. Obviously, we'll be investigating this breach of faith, this betrayal of America. I mean, we have the largest collection of government records related, for instance, to the spiritual leader of the 9/11 hijackers, Anwar al-Awlaki, who, by the way, was clearly an FBI informant. He was the American who became famous later for recruiting jihadis on the internet. And Obama assassinated him, the first American citizen assassinated by a president like that, without any due process. Now, did Obama know he had been working for the FBI previously? I don't know if he knew. But we know a lot of people knew in the Justice Department. A lot of people knew in the FBI, knew in the Defense Department. We had documents about Anwar al-Awlaki. And Catherine Herridge has done some great reporting on this as well. She was at Fox News at the time. So we had the FBI surveillance documents. So they're writing down what they were doing in terms of tracking him. And they were treating him as a dangerous armed terrorist, if I recall. And they talk about tracking him on Washington's D.C. metro. And they said they had to break off surveillance as he entered the Pentagon because he was going up into the Pentagon for one of these, you know, Islam is peace meetings during the Bush administration. That was the insanity that Judicial Watch uncovered, that the FBI, under Mueller, by the way, didn't want anyone to know. That's just one example of our fine work here. We found that the Saudis, or the government, lied about the Saudi flights that happened right after 9/11. Remember, the Saudi Arabian planes got out when no other planes were allowed to fly, including members of the bin Laden family. We caught them in lies there. I mean, you know, as I go back through time, because it's been 23 years, we've done all this incredible work. We exposed how Bill Clinton was warned about what bin Laden was up to. Not the specifics of the 9/11 attack, but that he was a terrorist menace and had been involved in terrorist attacks all over the world, and he did nothing. You know when he was warned in 1996? All of that uncovered by Judicial Watch. We've worked with members of the 9/11 Commission to get transparency. I mean, we sued unsuccessfully for material on the bin Laden raid. They didn't want to give us pictures of bin Laden's body because they didn't want to upset the terrorists. You wouldn't believe the battles we've been in, some of which we lose, some of which we've made remarkable finds on and historic finds. So what next? We're going to be subject to more terrorism. That's what's going to happen. I mean, when you combine this with the retreat from Afghanistan, the worst surrender in American history, the most significant surrender in the history of our country in Afghanistan. Funding Iran as they attack Israel, or indirectly funding Iran by allowing them access to money that we could otherwise stop. I mean, even these hostage swaps or these prisoner swaps this week. I mean, Russia just essentially kidnaps Americans in Russia and holds them hostage, and we get murderers and spies out for them in exchange. And there's still 20 Americans still there. Weakness, almost like a contempt for Americans' safety and our national security. So what's going to happen? We're going to investigate this. I don't know if the case itself or the plea deal itself can be maybe pulled back. Maybe it can. I don't know. But the House isn't going to do anything about it. Oh, I'm sure they'll have a hearing, but they're out of town for 6 weeks. Did you know that? How much vacation do you get during the summer, or at all? You get 6 weeks? So they'll be yelling and screaming about what Biden did, but it's likely Judicial Watch will be one of the few trying to figure out how it came about and who was involved. It's the least we owe for those who were murdered that day. Unbelievable. So this week we had more information come out about the Secret Service. I have a cold, so that's why I keep on rubbing my eye. Excuse me. And the acting Secret Service head, I think his last name is Mr. Rowe, R-O-W-E, he testified to Congress this week. And again, it was a disaster. He, by the way, was the assistant director. I forget his official title, but he was even more directly responsible in terms of the chain of command for protection decisions. So obviously Cheadle is where the buck ultimately stopped, but you know, he had his hands much closer to the decision making related to presidential protection. And here's some questioning of him by Senator Ted Cruz the other day.
I believe that the Secret Service leadership made a political decision to deny these requests. And I think the Biden administration has been suffused with partisan politics. Did the same person who denied the request for additional security to President Trump also repeatedly deny the request for security to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., whose father was murdered by an assassin and whose uncle was murdered by an assassin? Did the same person make that decision?
Senator, what I will tell you is that Secret Service agents are not political.
Okay, you're not answering my question. But you know what? Leadership appointed by the president. Leadership appointed by the president.
I mean, if you want to know what's wrong with the Secret Service, and I'm sure Roe thinks he's doing all the right things. I mean, but these guys are relatively oblivious and almost comically resistant to criticism. And Roe never told him who made the decision, pretending not to know. We already know who made the decision. It was the head of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas. We uncovered it through litigation, the outrageous decision to decline Kennedy Secret Service protection. There's the headline. DHS Secretary Mayorkas personally declined presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s request for Secret Service protection. Let's scroll down. I forget the detail here. I want to see what it is. The newly obtained records include a July 21st, 2023, two-sentence letter sent by Mayorkas to then Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle, advising her, on May 26, 2023, Kennedy submitted a request to DHS for Secret Service protection. in accordance with the authority set forth in Title 18, you know, and he cites the section, and in consultation with the Candidate Protection Advisory Committee, I decline to identify Candidate Kennedy for the United States Secret Service Protection at this time. And who was over there on that committee? Schumer, Mitch McConnell, McCarthy, Hakeem Jeffries, and Senate Sergeant of Arms, Ms. Gibson. So there you have it. Mayor Orcas did it. And that, you know, and all of that is just dressing the presidential advisory, whatever that committee is. It's a committee. He's running the show. He could have authorized it on his own. And, of course, Kennedy did end up getting Secret Service protection after Trump was nearly killed. And when he says the Secret Service agents aren't political, maybe that's true. But the agency is as political as any other government agency in the government, federal agency in the government. I mean, look at this video of the shooter. It's astonishing. We just played a video. Do they expect us to believe the Secret Service wasn't in a position to see him? Didn't see him? I can't believe how, you know, I knew intellectually it was really close to where he was. But when you see the video about how close he was, the shooter, crooks to Trump and the crowd, I mean, the Secret Service nearly got Trump killed. And there's been zero accountability for it thus far. The head of the Secret Service had to retire or resign. But it's still, there's been no emergency actions taken by the Secret Service I could detect. I'm sure they've increased security. They tried to tell Trump, don't go to rallies anymore. And everyone's making a big deal about whether he's fired anyone yet. They can't fire anyone within a few weeks of a shooting like that. That's not the way government works, guys. The way government works also is that no one is responsible for that. This is what is so insipid about these giant bureaucracies. They deliberately spread responsibility so everyone can point fingers at each other. I mean, you saw Roe out there attacking during the hearing the local police. I mean, I'm sure they wish the police had done what they hoped they would do, but who's ultimately responsible for the protection of Trump, the Secret Service? And it's still being politicized. We had Ray disingenuously suggest last week, oh, I don't know if a bullet hit Trump. Maybe it was shrapnel. And so Senator Kennedy from Louisiana forced the FBI to backtrack on Ray's buying into the Democratic line that it was basically like the landing on a moon, fake.
Is there any doubt in your mind or in the collective mind of the FBI that President Trump was shot in the ear by a bullet fired by the assassin crooks?
Senator, there is absolutely no doubt in the FBI's mind former President Trump was hit with the with a bullet and wounded in the ear. No doubt there.
Yeah, so that was a more junior FBI official, although one who's, I think, leading the investigation. You know, he wasn't going to pull a Ray. So that was cleanup by the FBI. And to be clear, I was joking when I said the moon landing was fake. Saying people who believe the moon landing was fake, that's the same crowd that believes Trump wasn't shot and it was all fake. Now, I say that, and I'm sure we're going to have 500 comments from people telling me that the moon landing was faked. But I can't control that, right? I just have to say what I believe. And at the same time, the Secret Service is on the Hill. Roe is on the Hill talking about how transparent his agency is. They're completely stonewalling Judicial Watch. As I've told you previously, we've initiated a massive investigation into the Trump assassination attempt, with FOIAs and information requests to various federal agencies and state and local officials in Pennsylvania. The FOIA requests at this time number well over 25. I'm not counting them literally, but I think it's well over 25. And the day that Mr. Roe was testifying, patting himself on the back for his agency's transparency, they sent a request or a response to our three FOIA requests that essentially sought pretty much the key documents on the assassination attempt. And they told us we're not getting one record under law and that you're not going to get one record under law. Let me get the press release with the detail here. Excuse me. You're not going to believe all this stuff we have to talk about today. Here it is. Secret Service rejects FOIA requests for any records about the assassination attempt of Trump. The requests seek emails, videos, advanced survey security, and other documents. Basically, everything that you might think to ask for, and that we know to ask for, given our expert experience in matters such as this. And the Secret Service refused to produce not one record in response. And this is what they wrote to us. It's on, there's the letter. It's that second paragraph there. Dear Requestor, at this time, pursuant to Title 5, USC 35, Section 552B7A, any potentially responsive records, if they exist, are exempt as disclosure could reasonably be expected to interfere with enforcement proceedings. The citation of the above exemption is not to be construed as the only exception which may be available under the FOIA. So there you have it. You know I talked about this a little bit already. I want to show you a video where I talked about it because I got a little angle I want to talk to you about on this as well. But they basically told us because there's an enforcement proceeding, which potentially will never end, right? The shooter's dead. So it's an excuse, not a reason, not to provide information to the American people. Let's play the video that I wanted to highlight for folks because you're not going to believe what happened.
It's officially a cover-up. The Secret Service is refusing to provide any documents to Judicial Watch in response to its multiple FOIA requests for records about the assassination attempt on President Trump. This comes at the same time as the acting head of the agency is up here on Capitol Hill promising full and complete transparency. They just told us that we will get no documents because the disclosure of the documents could reasonably be expected to interfere with enforcement proceedings. The shooter is dead. What are the enforcement proceedings? This is a shameless cover-up. As we note, for the Secret Service to promise transparency to Congress while hiding every possible FOIA record from the American people is yet another indictment of this corrupt and failing agency. The Biden Secret Service has a lot to hide, and Judicial Watch is preparing to go into court to get the answers.
Pretty non-controversial description, don't you think, given what's happening? And guess what? TikTok, we've got a channel on TikTok. TikTok took the video down. You see, right next to there it is. It says there's been a community guidelines violation. I don't even know what that other censorship is. So TikTok is, you know, talking about how the First Amendment protects TikTok from being shut down by the government, is shutting down criticism of the government by Judicial Watch. By the way, I'm already banned from TikTok. They banned me, I forget when they did it. It's a few years now. They just took all my stuff down. It's just, as you said, you're banned. Again, for violating some rules, they never told me what the rules were that I violated and how so. And my material was pretty straightforward. And that was during the days when everyone was being censored for all sorts of reasons. So a major platform is defending the Secret Service cover-up of the assassination of President Trump. TikTok is suppressing information on the cover-up of the assassination of President Trump and the failures of the Secret Service related to that. Incredible. I don't know if you can hear the chair, but it's... Can people hear the chair over the microphone? Yeah, well, if it's driving you crazy, my dear listener, you can imagine what it's doing to me. We'll get some WD-40. I'm going to have to lose some weight or something. So that's your Secret Service. So they denied the request, and what happens next is, I think... we have to administratively appeal the denial. And if past is any experience, they will tell us, too bad, so sad, and we'll have to sue. So they basically told us, sue if you don't like our answer, and which we're prepared to do. So massive Secret Service cover-up, and, you know, as you can see, there's a lot to hide from the videos we just showed you. I've got a lot to get through today, so I can't spend time yelling too much about any one topic. So, listeners, you're going to have to do some of my... you're going to have to channel me in the comments and say things you think I should have said or would have said, given your knowledge of my prior comments on the topics of the day. Oh... before I move on, how about the Olympics? I think they're officially evil, by the way. I mean, I mean, just the news this week of the boxer who's banned from a major boxing association because she is a male, essentially. And I'm not saying she's not transgendered. It's just that has supposedly all the features of a male and all the strength. And the one poor Italian boxer had to quit, you know, after a minute into the fight to save her life. And I hear today, I don't know, guys, if you saw that in the back yet, she pummeled another female boxer. I think and won again. Oh, maybe it was a different. I think there are two male boxers fighting in the female divisions.
Correct.
Right. So this maybe was a second boxer. So there's that contempt and placing women in danger because of this transgender extremism. Even though that boxer isn't transgender, it's the whole politics around it that allow her to keep. To allow her and the other person involved to keep boxing despite them being banned in the major private boxing association. But the Olympics began with an attack on Jesus Christ, a blasphemous attack on Jesus Christ, mocking the Last Supper, or drag queens traipsing around children. And that's bad enough, right? But then it was disclosed that it looked like one of the drag queens, or one of the performers, to be more specific, around the child or children, looks like he exposed himself. Well, for that to be aired on U.S. airwaves is illegal. Obscene and indecent content is not supposed to be aired. As I say, Judicial Watch filed an FCC complaint on that specific issue for airing the obscene and indecent content. Now, it's not often enforced because of the destruction of our culture. But if they can't enforce this, placing a child at risk through this sexualized content that looks like included nudity, then what is it there for? And the law prohibits it from being aired. It isn't free speech. Obscenity isn't speech, folks. This is what the complaint we wrote reads. NBC and its various stations, outlets on TV, cable, and internet carried and continues to make available the Olympics opening ceremony on July 26, which included an adult male purposefully exposing himself in the presence of a child slash children. The content is both obscene and indecent, and to make matters worse, was aired during the viewing hours when it was likely seen by millions of children and minors. And as I note, the content occurred during a portion of the ceremonies where they were mocking Jesus Christ, blaspheming Christ, attacking and mocking Christians. And women, by the way. The drag queens were mocking women. I mean, that's part of their shtick, is to mock women and engaged in sexualized activity, depict sexualized activity. And in this case, it was done all around children repeatedly. So I think the Justice Department should be investigating what NBC was airing, given the involvement of children. And of course, transmitting obscene material over the air is a criminal violation of law as well. So this is what the FCC describes as obscene content. This is how they describe it. It does not have protection of the First Amendment. For content to be ruled obscene, it must meet a three-pronged test established by the Supreme Court. It must appeal to an average person's prurient interest, depict or describe sexual conduct in a patently offensive way, and taken as a whole, lack serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. Indecent content portrays sexual or excretory organs or activities in a way that is patently offensive, but does not meet the three-pronged test of obscenity. So it's a little bit less. It is a violation of federal law. Okay, it's not on this one, guys. Just bring it back to me. It is a violation of federal law to air obscene programming at any time. It's also a violation of federal law to broadcast indecent or profane programming during set certain hours. And by the way, profane programming includes grossly offensive language that is considered a public nuisance. And I don't think that applies here. Although, I don't know what they said. Under 18 U.S.C. Section 1464, whoever utters any obscene, indecent, or profane language by means of radio communications shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for not more than 2 years or both. Whoever knowingly utters any obscene language or distributes any obscene matter by means of cable television or subscription services on television shall be punished by imprisonment for not more than 2 years or by a fine in accordance with this title or both, etc. And as I say in our press release, the blasphemous Olympics opening ceremony, which included, among other obscene and indecent acts, a man partially exposing himself around children, is patently offensive to any sensible American and requires immediate FCC action against NBC. And the Justice Department should launch a criminal investigation, especially given the use of children in obscene and indecent NBC broadcast. Now, personally, if I were an athlete in the Olympics, I'd leave after what they did in the opening. Team USA should have pulled out. Some might think that's too far. It's not fair. They can't control the lunatics running France or the Olympics. But it shows you how far the left has fallen, or the true agenda of the left. This attack on Christianity, the blasphemy of Christ, the contempt for the views of billions of human beings in a way that wouldn't be tolerated for any other religion. There's this obsession with destroying traditional Christianity and replacing it with wokeism. The sexualization, the demonic nature of the focus and targeting of children. It's an attack on women, children, and Western civilization, and God. And it could be illegal. And that's why Judicial Watch filed that FCC complaint. And by the way, you can file an FCC complaint. Just go to the FCC website and go to the, you know, file a complaint section. You could figure it out. I guess we could put the link below. But I kind of jokingly say, you know, when I say, well, how, people say, well, how is it I do this? I say, it's the government. You can figure it out. It's not rocket science. It's the government. They don't make it, you know, they make it hard or harder than it needs to be. But a little diligence and a little checking, you can figure out how to file the FCC complaint. So what is the FCC going to do? Probably not much. But I thought it was important to make a stand here on behalf of basic decency against the sexual exploitation of children and against obscenity. So the other big news this week, moving on from the Olympics, is the finding by Judicial Watch that 113 non-citizens voted in the D.C. presidential primary this year in 2024. So the law, this is the first election that aliens in Washington, D.C. could vote in. We already uncovered that over 500 registered to vote. Citizens, non-citizens are eligible to register to vote in supposedly only local elections like the D.C. council and mayor. And they don't ask if you're here legally or not. So it's not like these are longtime foreign national residents that are only able to vote. Green card holders, which I would find objectionable too, since they're not citizens, but at least they're here legally. They don't care. If you're illegal, you can vote. So we found over 500 registered to vote in a prior Judicial Watch FOIA. And they just told us how many voted. 113 aliens voted in the presidential primary election. And what was curious about the document was they said they voted in this presidential primary election. Well, if they voted in the federal election, it would be a crime. It ought to be a crime locally, but it ain't anymore. So something's got to happen. There's got to be an additional investigation. We had asked for the records back in July. All public records identified the number of non-citizens who voted in the June 2024 primary. We asked for details where they are, and they gave us a list, 113 people. We didn't... We have the list. Anyone can ask for the list, I guess, that they want. But we didn't put it out there because it provided us all the names and addresses of people. We're not going to put their names and addresses up on the internet. But it is a public document, so the government has the information. So it's not like it's not going to be available to anyone else who wants to get it. So I don't know, and it doesn't delineate of those 113 aliens who voted in the presidential primary who are here legally versus who are not here legally. But they're all non-citizens. Based on the updated post-primary data from the spreadsheet, the most recent material we received, we found that the turnout rate in the primary among non-U.S. citizens was 19% compared to the turnout rate among U.S. citizens of 25% or nearly 26%. So if what does that show? This shows two things. It could be that they violated the law in allowing them to vote in the presidential primary, although we're not sure about that. So we're trying to get some answers there. But it also shows that if aliens are registered to vote, they'll vote in substantial numbers. Here they're registered to vote legally. In many places, you can be sure they're not able to vote legally or register to vote legally, and they're still registered to vote. Data shows that it happens. In Ohio, it was just announced that they had to remove or are removing 500 names from the voter rolls of people that they found to be here as non-citizens. So they were registered to vote. They're not supposed to be on the rolls. It happens. As I keep on saying, it's a numbers game. Tens of millions of people are here who are not citizens. A percentage of them are going to register to vote, and then a percentage are going to vote. It's easy. And we're supposed to pretend it doesn't happen. And the law says, well, you can't prove it happens or it happens rarely. We don't know because there's no way to check. And if they wanted to be, and if they want to check, the left throws up hurdles. You know, I'm calling the Biden border invasion these days the Biden future voter importation program. I mean, that's what it's about. They want amnesty for these individuals. And by that means a pathway to citizenship and voting. And as we see here in Washington, D.C., the extreme left does not believe the franchise should depend on whether you're a citizen or not. So as far as I'm concerned, 113 votes of citizens could have been canceled out as a result of these non-citizens voting. And I think that's an outrage. And I don't care if it's legal or not. I don't think it ought to be. Congress hasn't acted to stop it, even though they could. As I said in the release, the fact that 113 foreign nationals voted in the presidential primary in Washington, D.C. is a national scandal. It's our nation's capital, for heaven's sake. It's an insult to every American voter, the very notion of citizenship. And given what they told us in the documents, it may be a violation of federal law. I mean, and there are a lot of jurisdictions around here in D.C., for instance, that allow non-citizens to vote. And I think they allow it up in Vermont, too. So we're going to keep on keeping on, trying to figure out what's going on and exposing this. Okay. Staying with election integrity, you may recall that Judicial Watch is suing Illinois and California to clean up the voter rolls in those states. Just the other day, we threatened Oregon with a federal lawsuit because they weren't cleaning up their rolls. And you know, who knows? Maybe if they do what we ask them to do and they get cracking, we won't sue. But it looks like we may have to sue Oregon as well. And Illinois has significant problems. Over 19 counties, I recall, when we filed this lawsuit back in March, reported removing no dead people from the rolls. Many counties were removing, you know, virtually no one from the rolls, including extremely populous counties. 23 Illinois counties, for example, with a combined registration of nearly a million voters, 980,000, reported removing a combined total of 100 registrations of people who moved or died. Under the National Voter Registration Act, which requires you undertake a reasonable program to clean up the rolls, doesn't require that the rolls be perfect. It requires you try to figure out if people aren't voting for a period of time, where they are, and if they're not around and not answering your inquiries, you remove them from the name. You remove them from the voting rolls. It's essentially what happens. So our lawsuits ought to be not controversial, because it's basically an easy process. It doesn't get any easier than the basic process that the states ought to be doing is, and I've described it before, it's worth describing again, that if you don't vote in a federal election or even a local election, but you don't vote, you get a card from the jurisdiction. Hey, are you there? You didn't vote. And if you don't respond to that card or don't vote in the next two federal elections, so that's 2 years, 4 years. And it could be as long as 6 years if they're kind of counting from the beginning of when you first don't vote. So a long period of time, almost a decade, they take your name off the rolls, or they're supposed to. And the fact they're not doing it is just, I guess it shouldn't be unbelievable to me, but it's inexcusable. It really is inexcusable in this day and age. And as we've disclosed before, our prior litigation here has resulted in millions of names being removed from the rolls, 4 million names in just the last year or two. So it's a major issue. So who would be opposed to this? Well, it looks like the unions in Illinois, one of the most powerful interest groups in the nation, obviously, big labor, especially with the Democratic Party. And in Illinois, they have even a bigger influence because Illinois tends to be a one-party state in terms of political power. It's largely controlled by Democratic Party politicians there and voters. So Democratic Party interest groups like the big unions have an outsized influence. They've sought to intervene, and they were allowed to intervene as defendants in our lawsuit. So now not only is Judicial Watch having to battle our attorneys for Judicial Watch and our other clients, the powerful state of Illinois, to clean up their rolls, now we're taking on two of the most powerful unions in the state. Here's my tweet. Let's go to the tweet where I talked about the issues at the issue here.
Hey everyone, we have a big problem. There are still too many dead names on the voting rolls. We just found in Illinois, Judicial Watch did, that 19 counties there haven't removed, according to their own data, the names of dead people from the voting rolls in the last few years. And that's one of the reasons we just filed a major federal lawsuit against Illinois to force that state to clean up its voting rolls as federal law requires. Now, Judicial Watch already has a demonstrated, powerful record of success. 4 million names across the country have been removed thanks to Judicial Watch's heavy lifting. There's a lot more work to be done. As Illinois shows, dirty voting rolls can mean dirty elections. I encourage you to support our work. We need to clean up those rolls. We need to protect election integrity. We can't do enough to make sure our elections are fair and free and clean.
So let's look at that tweet there. Let's go back to the tweet itself.
Stand by, pulling up.
That was a good statement by me. You should be supporting Judicial Watch, especially after you read this tweet. Well, anyway, I don't know if we have the tweet, if we can get it. But the federal court handling our case allowed two powerful interest major unions to come in, the AFL-CIO and the, what is the second one? Is it Federation of, it's the teachers union. I forget the specific name of the teachers union.
Illinois Federation of Teachers.
Yeah, the Illinois Federation of Teachers. So two of the most powerful unions in the state of Illinois are now fighting Judicial Watch to prevent the cleanup under the National Voter Registration Act that must take place from taking place. And why on earth would you be opposed to cleaning up election rolls? Or voter ID, or citizenship verification, and all the other basics we need to ensure election integrity. You know why? I think they don't like it, because they want to be able to steal elections if necessary, meaning they, the left. Are the unions saying they want to steal elections? They're never going to admit to doing that. But the I can draw my own conclusions about their opposition to this type of work. So it's not only the state of Illinois we have to fight, but the entire left-wing Borg. And this isn't the first time it's happened. Soros-funded groups come in. These big Democratic Party front groups come in to defend the indefensible. The failure to do the basics of making sure the voting rolls are clean. If the voting rolls aren't clean, how can you have confidence that the elections are clean? Dirty voting rolls can mean dirty elections. So we're going to keep on fighting. The lawsuit will continue. But now we just have to fight more people to get the basics done to make sure that elections are going to be a bit more honest in Illinois. On to the next topic, January 6th, right? January 6th. We're not allowed to ask questions about January 6th. Who was there? What government agencies were involved? Who knew what and when about the likelihood of things getting out of control? Did the FBI have people there? You know, all sorts of issues like that. We still don't know how many FBI people were in the crowd that day. But did you know? I know you didn't know, because I didn't know until we disclosed it a little while ago. When did we disclose it? Back in March, that the CIA had people working January 6th. We uncovered back in March that the CIA had teams assigned and working on, I think it was the pipe bombs that were found. And I think they had a dog. They had a dog team related to that. Hold on one second. Yeah, two CIA bomb techs were assisting with the pipe bomb scene on New Jersey Avenue, and another record referenced several CIA dog teams on standby. So we thought that was very interesting, and we uncovered it. And so what we did was we asked for more records about the CIA's role in January 6th. Who, what staff and personnel, why were the CIA at a domestic political First Amendment-related event? Why were they there? They're not supposed to be involved in domestic operations. Very interesting, isn't it? So we immediately filed a FOIA back in March with the CIA about January 6th, a comprehensive FOIA, and they gave us the proverbial hand to the face. They basically told us, I don't even think they responded. Let me see what they did. Sometimes it's fun to see. Oh, here's the lawsuit. I'll tell you how they specifically responded. The CIA acknowledged receipt, so we filed it on March 14th. They acknowledged receipt on the same day and gave us a little reference number, and that was the last we heard of them. 4 months ago. 4 or 5 months. What is it? 1, 2, 3. April, May, June, July. 4 months ago. So what is the CIA covering up about January 6th? We're in federal court now to find out. But Congress isn't doing anything. They're on vacation. I already told you that. It's Judicial Watch. It's Judicial Watch always with the heavy lifting to get basic information about what your government's up to, especially on important issues like this. Did you know the CIA had people on the ground on January 6th in Washington, D.C.? I suspect you didn't. So this is just one of many January 6th related lawsuits and investigations. We are representing, as you may know, the estate and family of Ashley Babbitt, who was needlessly and, in our view, unlawfully killed on January 6th by Lieutenant Byrd. That lawsuit is proceeding. In fact, there is it's the first court hearing on the issue or on the case is scheduled for next week. So I don't think anything substantive is going to happen at that hearing, but we'll get a feel for where the court is on the issues. There are still issues about whether the court case should be here in Washington, D.C., or where we initially filed it in her hometown in San Diego. The Biden Justice Department immediately sought to and successfully did move it to here to Washington, D.C. So this initial hearing is going to be here in Washington, D.C. on August, I think it's August 6th. We have all sorts of other January 6th FOIAs and, you know, for videos and emails and everything you could think of, including just the lawsuit we filed against the D.C. police for their body cam videos of January 6th. But the CIA adds a new wrinkle to it, doesn't it? So come back here often for updates because, you know, as I was on Maria's show, Maria Bartiromo's show the other day, I think I talked about this last week, but I made the point that, you know, everyone, they want us to move on from all of these outrageous things that have been happening. Trump's assassinated, move on. Trump's prosecuted improperly, move on. We have this January 6th sham investigation, cover-ups, abuses by the Justice Department, move on. Everything that the left does to abuse power and the government does to violate the law, we're all supposed to just grin and bear it and pretend it never happened. And that's not what Judicial Watch does. We don't move on. We demand answers and we demand accountability as best as we're able under the law and under our Constitution. I mean, in everything is a battle. Everything's a battle. I mean, we're in this pitched battle to get the audio tapes, for example, from the Justice Department of Biden's interviews with Special Counsel Herr. They're still hiding them from us. And we just filed and completed the briefing this week. Remember, they didn't prosecute Joe because of his bad memory. And also give us the audio of those tapes showing he had a bad memory. They don't want to. They want to blow up FOIA to protect Joe Biden. Although a redacted transcript of the interview was released in response to our lawsuit, the public has a significant interest in hearing the audio recordings because, as we say in our most recent round of briefing, an open question remains about whether Special Counsel Herr's conclusion that President Biden should not be prosecuted for his mishandling classified records is supported by the evidence. So we just want information on the Justice Department's, in my view, corrupt decision to give Joe a get-out-of-jail-free card. The Biden agency, the Justice Department, is demanding that there be a law enforcement privilege. There's no ongoing proceeding. There's no privilege necessary. They worried about Joe's privacy. He doesn't have a privacy interest that's protectable here. The transcript's already out there. By the way, the transcript that Judicial Watch proved was doctored. highlighting the need for the audio because they admitted that they took out material. And they keep on running this argument that AI will be used to manipulate the audio and video. So what? That's not a reason to hide records. That can be done for any record. And if someone wants to mess with the audio and video, that's their First Amendment right. I mean, under their new theories, the law would end for, it would, a FOIA would effectively end for a whole category. I don't see how we could get any records under FOIA under this theory. As I say in our release, we've been doing this for 30 years, and I've never seen anything like it. We've never seen such a dishonest assault on the people's right to know. And we're asking the court to release the record, the audio tapes. They can't, the court can't release it soon enough. So that battle continues. Isn't it remarkable everything Judicial Watch is doing? January 6th, her, you know, the Biden audios, audio files or audio recordings, cleaning up the voter rolls. I'm forgetting even what I talked about this show. Doing this work on 9/11, sending people to, we're Judicial Watch going to Gitmo to observe the proceedings. Tremendous amount of work. And defending the rule of law. Yeah, before I go, you may have missed it. Whoever is running the Biden administration, because Joe Biden isn't, because he's mentally unfit, in my view, they put out this this program to destroy the Supreme Court of the United States. And I'm dead serious there. They're pretending it's reform. It's the opposite of reform. It's the opposite of reform. It's the destruction of the independent judiciary. The Supreme Court, which, by the way, is not set up by Congress. It's not a creature of the presidency. Obviously, Congress has a role through approval and confirmation of Supreme Court appointees. The president gets to pick them. But it's an independent branch of government, a separate branch of government set up by the Constitution of the United States. The Supreme Court is. That's where the judicial power is. So here are Biden's so-called reforms that are big lies. They're destruction. So this is one, no immunity for crimes of a former president committed in office. So this is an anti-Trump gambit. So the Supreme Court found the Constitution protects the president and gives him immunity. So he wants to undo that decision, which was thoughtful and correct, with a constitutional amendment that would destroy the presidency. So it's a twofer from the Biden administration. They want to destroy the Supreme Court, and they want to destroy the presidency by making it a president liable for being put in jail every time someone disagrees with his policy, and they can get a prosecutor to prosecute him. Term limits. This is the key. This is designed to knock off the black justice on the Supreme Court, who's a conservative that the left hates, Justice Thomas. And it would blow up the Supreme Court and end the Supreme Court as we know it. Term limits. Let's go back. I want to stick on that term limits for a second. So if it's passed and it's not constitutional because the Supreme Court specifically envisions and allows for lifetime appointments, it would change the makeup of the court and remove all the conservatives, remove the conservative majority and turn it into a liberal majority. So that's communism. And then number three, more communism, binding code of conduct for the Supreme Court. And I say communism, I know it's literally not communism, but it's the approach. It's this approach to destroy institutions, destroy the Constitution. That is communism. If you want to blow up our system of government, through a revolutionary approach to politicize the courts, which is what left despots have been doing all over the world. That is literally communism. That's what's going on here. So when they talk about a code of conduct, what they're trying to do is to put the Supreme Court in a corner where through political charges against them for ethics violations, they can be subjected to investigations that by people who aren't authorized under the Constitution to look at them. Because the Supreme Court is the highest court in the land. How can there be a lesser body that looks at them? Let's go to that ethics violation rule. Congress should pass binding enforceable conduct and ethics rules that require justices to disclose gifts. Of course, Congress doesn't do that, by the way, in a proper way. Refrain from public political activity, which is not what they care about, as long as liberals do. And this is key, recuse themselves from cases in which they are their spouses. So now they're punished for their spouses. The left doesn't like women and spouses who do work outside the home. Outrageous. And how is this going to be enforced? By judges the Supreme Court oversees? That's absurd. It can't be done. The Supreme Court is the final judge of its own ethics. And if there's something that is egregious, obviously there's the impeachment method, but there's none of that. No one's violated any rules. No one's done anything requiring recusal. They can scream all they want about it, but it's not true. So this is just a nasty attack on Justice Thomas, Justice Alito. And it's a pressure campaign as part of, I said, a communist pressure campaign to destroy our system of government. They want to pack the court. They want to destroy the legitimacy of the court because the court isn't ruling the way they like. So our country's at risk through this Supreme Court reform process, and we need to take it seriously. And not only, you know, it may not pass because of the politics and, you know, the makeup of the Congress and the difficulty of passing a constitutional amendment. But when you attack the structures of the rule of law, even if you don't successfully get some, you know, changes in the way the court operates, you undermine the whole foundation of the system, which is, again, another goal of the communists. They don't care if it's wrecked. So even as a disabled Biden cognitively disabled Biden, you know, it's still a dangerous situation in the sense now he's completely a vehicle, an empty vessel for the most radical extremists on the left in government and outside of government. There's nothing they're not willing to say or do, it seems. I mean, they gave these terrorists a pass on the death penalty for 9/11. How's that not extreme? They want to destroy the Supreme Court. How's that not extreme? And just today, it's reported that Kamala Harris is the official nominee for the Democratic National Committee, the Democratic Party. And just like that, we're supposed to move on. 15 million votes have been obliviated. Is that even a word? Sounds like one. Democratic Party, they don't care about the Democratic Party voters. They just throw... She's the first major party nominee in the modern era. I think you'd have to go to 68 at least. But even then, they had individual primaries. that no voter has voted for in a primary. It's purely a political coup. And the left gets angry when I call it a political coup. There's been reporting that Barack Obama threatened Biden. According to Seymour Hersh, the long-time journalist, he said, Joe, leave or we're going to invoke the 25th Amendment. I've got Kamala, and Pelosi and Schumer all on board. So it was a threat. And if that happened, it was a crime. I talked about it here.
Hey, everyone. There's breaking news that the 25th Amendment was used as a threat against Joe Biden by Barack Obama, Harris, and Pelosi to force them out of the campaign. If true, it would be a crime. But obviously, the Justice Department isn't going to do much of an investigation. But you can be sure Judicial Watch will. We've already launched an investigation into the 25th Amendment crisis related to Joe Biden.
So we're already on it. So I think it's an open question about the validity of Kamala Harris's nomination for the presidency. I think it's an open question about whether the voting rights of those Americans who participated in the primary have been violated. So I think there has to be a careful analysis of federal and state laws in that regard. I mean, it may be in the end she's the nominee, and that's just the reality of it. But why is it we just have to sit back and not ask questions? We're going to ask questions. That's what we do. How did she get the job? It's a coup when someone in power essentially is told they can't remain in power under threat of government action. Force. That's what government action is. It's force. So we're going to investigate it. We've already got FOIAs out. Left doesn't want us to do it. Congress doesn't want to do it. Some Republicans want Trump Biden to stay and don't care about the 25th Amendment. That's fine. That's a political argument. I think that shouldn't be the issue. The issue is, can he make decisions that aren't going to harm Americans? And I don't think he can, because he's cognitively disabled. So there we have it. We have a crisis, but don't despair, because Judicial Watch is here, and we'll continue to do what we can, at least, to expose it and try to fight it through the accountability measures available to us in this country, the greatest nation in America when it comes to the rule of law still and under our Constitution. So God bless you, God bless America, and I'll see you here next time on the Judicial Watch Weekly Update.
Thanks for watching. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and like our video down below.